podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. Oh, Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Here you go,
start on, please.
Dad, you're an awesome ultra runner.
Please put a shirt on.
There's Brian and I at the trailhead.
I see how lucid we are after that 10 miles.
And so we're planning on, how far are we going?
17, right?
18.
18.
It says 9.
Okay. On one of the sites I said yesterday. So I think it might be one of those trail things where the mileage isn't really the mileage. The mileage is just sort of an estimate on that particular day.
Oh, sure.
Nice day, though.
So describe the surroundings for us, Brian. Give us a narrative.
Good. I'm not very good at this, but it is a beautiful day. Blue skies, a couple clouds, nice and cool, nice and dry, though, which is nice after the past couple weeks. And
just very, nice. Nice is the word of the day.
Very green.
He's done barking at us. He's like, come on, stop talking, start running.
You can do better than that. Come on.
All right.
All right.
So, we just ascended Mount Watatic in just under 16 minutes.
Nice.
Thanks to the youthful enthusiasm of my friend Brian here.
I call it stupidity. But it's full sun. I've been up here for a while in the full sun. So we're going up this way. There's another mountain over here someplace called Pratt Mountain we're going over.
And then there's another one. There's a range on the other side of that called the New Ipswich. That's where we're going to turn around. But, yeah, wicked nice day. Not too hot. You see all those? Those are all blueberry bushes. So you go up and pick blueberries here with the kids. You know, in 5 years.
Yeah.
When you're not expecting. Oh man. So, believe it or not, we're not running. We're walking. Taking a walk break. Right, Brian?
That's right.
We're beat.
Muscle fatigue.
Go for it. 2 hours and 17 minutes, and you're absolutely right, because it wasn't my heart rate that got me back there. It was my quads.
Yep. My calves. My quads are fine. My calves are killing me.
And I tell you, we're going to have buns of steel after this. We actually turned around early. We're only going to do 16 miles. It's going to take us 4.5 hours. But you got to remember, it's four mountains we're running over. And some of this is pretty technical. So, what do you think so far?
It's fun. It's beautiful out, at least.
Needed about 12 more ounces of water.
Yeah.
For this bit.
I agree with you there.
And maybe a couple of bags of saline.
That's what we need. We need Anthony with his...
his EMT kit.
And we should just drop bags of saline along the trail instead of water.
So, I got an interview with Don Allison. He used to be the editor and owner of Ultra Runner magazine and ultrarunner.com. And he answers all my questions about my upcoming 50-mile ultra. And it was kind of funny because he was a little reticent when I first engaged him. And then as soon as I get him on mic, I couldn't get a word in edgewise. So it was 45 minutes, you know. So I'll probably have to split that one in half. But so you got any tips for us? Any new runner tips for us, Brian?
Me? No, just go out and have fun. That's all I try to do.
Yeah. That'll work. So me and Buddy did about a half marathon yesterday. And today we're going to end up only running probably 16 miles. Actually, not even running all of that, but we're going to end up being on our feet for close to 4.5 hours here. Look at this. Oh, this is pretty in here. It's nice. All right, 2 more minutes. We'll start running again. I wanted to tell everybody to go to Dave McGilvery's website, DMSE Sports, because he's going to be doing that halftime thing at the Boston Red Sox, where he's going to do on his birthday. He's going to run 54 miles and finish before the Red Sox game on the 15th.
Right.
And so you can go and you can pledge to the Jimmy Fund. So go to Dave's site and pledge to the Jimmy Fund. If you have ever heard of Dave or read about Dave, he's done this about 700 times. This is in commemoration of his running from Seattle to Fenway from one Red Sox game to another Red Sox game. In I don't know how long it was. It's pretty short. He ran right across the country and finished at finished inside Fenway. So do that. And this trail we're on is the Wapak Trail. Go to the Wapak Trail race. Paul Funch is a race director. I'm probably going to run it. And like I said, it's only 17 and a half miles, but I think even a race pace would take us over 4 hours, don't you think?
We could probably break four if we tapered and did all that fun stuff, but it would be a challenge.
Yeah, I did this 10 years ago when I was training for a 315 Boston qualifier, and it took me like 3:30, somewhere around there, so it runs like a marathon. And it's parts of it are pretty technical. All right, gotta zip up and get to running again. See ya.
Come on, speak into the microphone.
That's what you need for your intro. Buddy's going funny barking. So, 3 hours and 44 minutes.
Yeah, it sounds like my marathon time.
Eight mountains? Or four mountains?
Call it seven.
Call it seven? Because, oh yeah, we wimped out in the last one. We went around it. We took the shortcut. So, it definitely would have been like 4:15 if we had gone over Wetatic.
Absolutely.
So, that was a good check. You stay. You lay down. No bothering the pedestrians. Good boy.
Yeah.
Good boy. You stay.
And now for the equipment check.
Oh, I got one of those running moments here this morning. Went out and did my 2 hours, actually 1 hour and 15 minutes because I was flying. My normal 10K loop doesn't take me an hour, you know. It only takes me an hour when I'm doing these ridiculous 5 hour runs. But I was flying today, felt great. I always love it when you can run fast coming in. So I'm back. But had one of those running moments, looked down, got a little blood coming through the shirt. So even though I was only running a half marathon, isn't that great? You know, you get to this point and you're in your distance training and you say stupid things like that. I was only running a half marathon today. Easy weekend. Run another half marathon tomorrow. And it had that little blood stain on the nipple, bloody nipples. I have to look on the PodSafe Music Network to see if there's a band called the Bloody Nipples. If there is, I will get that. But so what do you do about your bloody nipples? Well, you know, there's different strategies for bloody nipples and other pointy bits. My buddy Frank swears by this those nip guards. They're like little sticky patches that you, little sticky donuts that you put around your nipples. And you reuse them. And he says they work great. And Frank would know. He's run a lot. Band-Aids, for me, don't work because there's a lot of hair and they fall right off. I sweat them right off. What I use is this stuff called Aquaphor, Aquaphor, or the generic equivalent of that. You can get it at the CVS or the Walgreens or whatever. And this stuff is great. It's better than Vaseline or other petroleum jelly kind of stuff because it lasts for a long time. Like this will last for 3 hours, whereas the Vaseline lasts for about an hour before it wears off. I got a great picture of me finishing my first qualified marathon. And I've got the big blood stain running down one side of my white shirt. And I got that sort of crazed eye of the tiger look crossing the finish line. So it's one of those heroic moments. But, you know, bloody nipples aren't going to kill you, you know. But, you know, you want to rub a little Aquaphor on? No problem. No problem at all. What else is good for this stuff? You know, another thing that I found you can do, I get a big bucket of it. It's like $16 for 14 ounces, 396 grams. It's a big, big thing. But you can get the little, at races, they used to give away the little samples, little half-ounce samples, and those are perfect. They fit right in your key pocket and your shorts.
And you can wear those. So if you have to reapply or you get another hot spot while you're running, you do that. Last week or a week ago, I was at work. I wanted to do a workout on the treadmill, but I forgot my socks, which is a whole nother topic, but I forgot my socks. And so what I did is I just rubbed this stuff all over my feet, and I did my workout, and I didn't tear up my feet so badly. So that's a good thing, too.
And now for our featured interview.
Hey, you're back.
I'm back.
So that wasn't too painful. So yeah, I'm signed up for, I don't know why I do this, but I get these bright ideas where I'll say, okay, I want to try something new to keep my running interesting, right?
Right. We all do.
And, right, so I go through these cycles, and, you know, eventually I'll end up killing myself, I guess. But coming out of Boston, I did the Mount Washington this year, and I did the Mountain Series last year, which was kind of cool. But, and I'm just a mid-packer, right? So I'm not running for time. I'm running for, you know, just fun, right? Try new things.
Okay.
Keep myself training. But I said, I signed up for this ultra in Vermont. Said that'll be something fun to try train for over the summer. And now I'm like into the heavy part of the training, and I got a lot of questions. So I said, who do I know who knows anything about ultra marathoning? And I was talking with Malloy down in Australia, right?
Yes.
And he goes, well, when you called Don, he used to own, you know, the Ultra Marathon website and Ultra Runner magazine. He must know something about Ultra Marathon, so I'm calling your bluff.
Okay.
So anyhow, what are you working on? You're working on a book?
Right.
What's it about?
Yeah, the book, it may seem fairly dry to you. It's really a social and cultural history of the, I guess you could characterize it as long distance running, and why, what has happened in our culture and throughout our history to get to the point where we're at now, by which I mean where a half a million people a year
yeah.
are running marathons, and it's just so taken for granted. It's a part of the fabric of society. How did we get here from 50 years ago when hardly anyone ever did it? It was considered a very strange thing
yeah.
to do. So what I'm trying to do is to pinpoint, to highlight some of the historical turning points and things like that. The one key turning or tipping point that the axis that the book is going to more or less turn on is the 1976 New York Marathon, which was the first big city marathon ever held. Really, it was changed the whole outlook of marathon running, that you could actually have a race that went through the city streets of a major metropolitan area and the whole thing, and it just, everything changed, in my opinion, based on that race in terms of mass participation. Everything took a while, and there were a lot more things that happened subsequent to that, such as, oh, I don't know, just pick for one, Oprah Winfrey running the marathon
yeah.
and making it possible for women like her to see that they could also do the same kind of thing. So that's the crux of the book, and I'm trying to cover a lot of the major historical aspects of the marathon and
yeah,
key
yeah.
parts of it. So that's overall a summary of the book, but it's quite a work in progress, and I've written 150,000 words already. And you can appreciate how much that is, and I'm not really anywhere near completing it yet.
Yeah, well, then you got to narrow that down to the best 15,000 words out of that, right?
No, this isn't going to be this will be a true book, a real tome, as it were.
I think that's a great topic.
Right,
because I see the same thing, you know. But
right.
you've been doing this longer than I have. You probably started back in the, 70s?
Yeah, my first...
In competitive running?
My first road race was in 1977, and my first
okay.
marathon was in 1979.
Okay, and back then, you know, just to put some scale to it, back then in the 70s, in the world, probably less than 20,000 people completed a marathon.
It was more than that. I think the number that USATF has was in the late 70s or 1980, I think it was 100,000, but sure, it was a whole lot different back then. When I was training for my first marathon, I was living in Connecticut. I more or less ran alone. I didn't really know anyone else who was doing one. There were only a couple. I wanted to run one in the fall, and not having got into New York City, there was only a couple of other options. It really wasn't
right.
Like there was. I ended up running this race called the Fox Trotters Marathon in Foxborough. There really weren't a lot of choices back then. And I'd buy a book at the bookstore and kind of read up on it and see what maybe other people had to say. But it was just the whole thing was a lot different, not to mention the fact that it was a heck of a lot more competitive. A lot of people who got into it, I was an athlete throughout high school in terms of playing other sports, and my transition to running was fairly easy. I was in good shape. I had to learn the nuts and bolts of it, but within 6 months of starting, I was felt like I was fairly accomplished. I mean, just as a for instance, the first road race I ever ran was a 10-kilometer race in Hartford in 1977, and I ran 37 minutes for 10K. That was the first race I ever did. I mean, people just don't do that now, really. I mean, unless you're an elite runner, I mean, but that's the way it was back then. The fact that it was my first race didn't matter. I was going to be competitive. I was going to push as hard as I could, all that kind of stuff, where nowadays people tend to ease into it a lot. A lot more.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of casual runners. Although it was the sort of the first mini running boom there with the whole gym fix thing.
That's right.
And, I was running cross country in high school at the time, and I remember it was just less everything. You couldn't find any information. All the training plans were just like run more, run harder.
Right.
You know, that was it. And there was I remember you could basically buy, there was three different shoes you could buy. You know, that was it. You know, now you got, 450 different styles of shoes you can choose from?
Right. Oh, yeah. It was a different era back then, no doubt. I can't say that I'm happy I came along when I did, and it all seemed to work out, although, like I said, so much has changed since then. I mean, just to touch one more thing on that, I think a lot of people in my ilk who were, say, young adults getting into running or aspired to running the marathon, you had Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter, and you would read about what kind of training they did, and you would try to emulate it. I mean, obviously not to their level of speed and endurance, but the kind of the same thing. You were like, okay, well, these guys are running all this mileage. I guess that's what I should do, too, to try to be, you want to be like one of those guys, I mean, as much as you possibly could. So I think that motivated a lot of people from our era to push and train very hard.
Yeah, and those guys were looking across the pond to, like, Zatopek and Nurmi and those other guys that had some, you know, they're doing the fartleks and the strength training, and they were trying to figure it out, too, when they were doing it, because there just wasn't any body of knowledge in America then.
But I think the key aspect was, in Rogers and Shorter, you had two guys to whom you could relate very easily.
Yeah, exactly.
Two champions, as opposed to now, where you've got a million different Kenyans and Ethiopians.
Yep.
You don't know who's who, and you're not really inspired. I mean, now I guess I should revise that a little bit with Ryan Hall. That's a guy that people can look up to nowadays. But for a long time, it seemed like it just was a mumbo-jumbo of African runners, and who's going to be motivated by that? I mean, because you can't relate to runners like that. It just, you can't do it.
Yeah, they're fine athletes, and we're not being xenophobic. It just doesn't have the same sort of star quality as Bill Rogers, who's Boston Billy, you know?
Yeah, we're all products of the era in which we grow up, and that was just one of the parts of that era in terms of running.
Yeah, you know what another inflection point, I think, and you probably already have this one in your book, is when Joan won the first women's marathon.
Right. For women, that was definitely a landmark for everyone, but for women in particular, the key aspect about that was obviously the women were finally getting their due in getting a marathon in the Olympics, and that particular event was the marathon that every woman, elite woman marathon in the world, wanted to win. You wanted to win there. It's become the first and of course Samuelson win Benoit then winning it so convincingly. And,
right, and she won it almost heroically, right? She just basically went out too fast and hammered it.
But that was her MO. That's the way she, when she set the world record in Boston the year before, she ran that way. That was her style. It didn't always work out, but when it did, it worked spectacularly. I mean,
right.
And Greta Waitz was actually the favorite going into that marathon, but
yep.
She ended up getting a back injury, threw out her back a couple days before the race. The way it played out competitively was because she didn't even think that she was going to be able to run weights, and then she showed up and said, well, I'll do what I can do, and she went out really, really conservatively, and all the other women were keying off of weights, and
yep.
Benoit said, the heck with this, this is too slow for me, so she went out on her own. She was the only one who went, and the rest of the women said, well, that's crazy, that's just one crazy runner going out.
Yeah,
we'll wait to see what Greta Waitz does, and as it turns out, she wasn't capable of running the kind of time that Benoit did. She ended up loosening up halfway through and running a good second half weights to win the silver medal, but all the other women who might have contended with Benoit, you never know, chose a strategy that was not a winning strategy for that day. So, and again, yeah, it'd be not to put too fine a point on U.S. and the Americans, but it was a U.S. winner and it, in a U.S. location in the
yep,
Olympics,
exactly.
And it was the whole key, a big key towards, like you said, a turning point in the marathon and women's running.
So anyhow, hey, I wanted to talk about my ultra training, dude.
Sure.
You used to own, or you just got rid of it, right? The Ultra Runner website.
I sold Ultra Runner magazine. Yeah, last year I sold the business. I published Ultra Running magazine for 7 years, from 2000 to 2007. I was an editor for 4 years before that. So for more than a decade, I was immersed in the world of ultra running as much as one could possibly be.
It's a different little community, isn't it?
It is. In a way, it harkens back to long distance running in the early mid 70s, in that it's something that not a lot of people do. It's somewhat misunderstood. It's intimidating to a lot of people, but a lot less than it used to be. It's, again, that's changed quite a lot because more women have gotten into it. It's the same kind of tipping point theory. The more people that you know who've done one, the easier it is for you to do it, unless you're a real maverick, unless you're the kind of person that says, and there's enough people out there, nobody's doing this, therefore I want to do it. There's a certain amount of people who do that, but there's a lot of other people who say, gee, I know Joe, and I know Steve, and I know Barbara, they all ran an ultra, so maybe I can do one too, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's almost, you know, this is actually a continuation of the trend you were talking about, where a lot of the people went, the old traditionalists went to ultra running to get away from the big marathons with all the...
And the reason that you state that, try something new, that's what motivated me to do my first ultra, that I had run 25 or more marathons, I knew that I had really run my best. I wasn't going to be setting another marathon PR.
Exactly.
I did the whole thing of running 2-3 marathons a year, peaking, pushing, trying to extract my best performance. And one year I said, you know what I want to do? And I had done a few triathlons, believe it or not, back in the early 80s, I mean, when hardly anybody was doing them, it was kind of a weird thing. I was just dabbled in that. It really wasn't my sport. But
yeah.
I said, in 1991, I was at a Christmas party, and a buddy, I said, you know, I'm going to do a 50-mile race next year. That's my goal. And he said, yeah, I'll do it with you. So we kind of made an agreement. He ended up never doing it. All throughout 1992, I was like, geez, I want to do one of these ultra. And then all of a sudden, this Nifty 50 popped up. It was a race that had been held for 4 or 5 years in the 80s and kind of went away. And then in 92, the guy was bringing it back. It was the USATF New England Championship. It was a road race. And everything fit in. It seemed like, okay, this is in November. This is the race for me. And I kind of put my focus for the year on that event.
So, Yeah. So was that a road race or a trail race?
It was a road race. Well, most ultras back then were road. There were a few trail races, but
I'm not sure my body could hold up to 50 miles on the road.
It's a different game. It's a, you know, it's hard to say. In some respects, the trails are more forgiving. They're easier, but anyone who thinks a trail ultra is going to be easy on the body, you know. It's still running. It's still moving, you know. It is a little bit different in the sense of you're not repeating that same repetitive motion for hours and hours on end. You walk and you hike and you go uphill and you go downhill on the trails. Where on the roads, it tends to be more like an extended marathon. But in any event, just to finish my story, that first ultra that I did in 92 turned out to be by far the best ultra I ever did. And the reason it was incredible because in retrospect and looking back on it, I trained better for that race than I did for any other subsequent ultra. It sounds odd to say that, but it was absolutely true. And I went into it kind of, some people, it was kind of that deal where you see sometimes elite runners have a great race in their first marathon who've done like great 10,000 meters. That kind of applied to me in the marathon. I was still running decently in the marathon, and I decided as a test I was going to run marathons on back-to-back weekends in about a month or 6 weeks before this 50. So I ran Bay State Marathon in 2:55, and that felt like a cakewalk. And then the next week I ran 2:58 in Cape Cod, so I had two sub-3-hour marathons in a week. So that really gave me a lot of confidence. And I went into the – so now I was – 6:30 pace was doable for me for the marathon very easily. And then in the ultra, I just started running 7-minute pace, 7:15, and it was an idea weather day, kind of like today in the sense it was raining and kind of overcast. I just started cranking it out and not really knowing what I was doing, and I got to the marathon in 3:09, which if I ever did that again, I would be freaking out. But at that point, it's like, okay, you know, big deal, 3:09. I just didn't know. And everyone in the race kept telling me, wait till you get past 30 miles, then you're really going to, it's really going to get to you. Well, as it turns out, between 30 and 40 miles, I ran faster than anybody else in the race. It was crazy. So
just had one of those days, huh?
I did. And one small anecdote, my sister was down there crewing for me, helping me out, and at one point, I'd say 37 miles, maybe 38, I was, I think, in fourth place, and my sister said, you might win this thing, you got a chance at winning this, you should see the guy who's winning, he looks awful, he's been throwing up on the side of the road, and so at that point, I was starting to feel it towards 40 miles, and I told her, hey, listen, you know, I'm just trying to get through this thing. Forget about winning.
that's amazing.
I ended up coming in fifth place, and as it turns out, the guy who won was Jim Garcia, who's a great ultra runner. And that was his MO, always like looking horrible, and came later to learn. That was the first time I ever met him, actually. We became good friends. But so I ran 6 hours 13 in my first 50 mile. I mean, under 7:30 pace for 50 miles.
Wow.
Which I never, ever, ever came close to approaching that kind of performance again. It was just my day. Everything went right. And
You had the weather. You had everything.
So it does happen like that sometimes. But
Well, that's the thing. You know, when you show up at the starting line, if everything feels right, sometimes your best bet is just to go.
Right. Of course, that doesn't always work. Sometimes you and the ultras, I mean, the thing people tend to forget about ultras is they're long. They take a long time. And that just allows more opportunity for things to go wrong. And not to be too pessimistic about it, but sometimes if you're running a marathon and you start to have problems, you can kind of muscle your way through it or deal with the problem, say, hey, you know, this is going to be 3 hours or whatever it's going to be, and I can kind of just finesse my way through the thing and deal with the problems afterwards. Well, if you're doing an ultra, it's going to take 12 hours or 8 hours or 24 hours, and you start having problems at 2 hours, you're not going to just sit there and go, okay, I'll suffer for the next 20 hours.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You have to solve your problems during the race as they come up, or, obviously, avoid the problems from happening in the first place. That's managing your body. One of the best advice I ever read about ultra, it's just so simple that it sounds trite, but it's true, is in ultra, in short distance races, you want to maximize your energy output. You want to train yourself to output as much energy as you can, and in ultras, you want to minimize your energy output. You want to conserve energy, not expend it. So anything you're doing that's going to be any kind of waste of energy or just pushing too hard, it's probably going to be detrimental. Now, that may go against what I said in terms of my first ultra, but again, that was just one of those days where, and as it turns out, I was managing my energy output. It just was, that's what I was capable of doing on the day.
Right.
So it's similar to marathon in the sense that you can't sit there and say, I'm going to do X time. And I'm going to force my body to go through what it needs to go through to achieve that. That's a losing strategy. What you have to do is say, "I'm going to minimize my energy output, allocate my energy over the course of the ultra, and try to optimize my race as much as I possibly can." And if it turns out you're doing well, then all the better. And You have a good race, but
that's one of the things I'm looking at this. You know, it's 50 miles, right? I'm like a 3:30 marathoner right now,
right?
And I'm not training real hard, but I'm in decent shape. I ran Boston this year, ran Mount Washington, right? So I'm saying, okay, if I take that, you know, that's not even twice the marathon length, or maybe it's like twice the marathon length. If I do that, that means that, you know, if I extend that out, does that mean I get to take a 3-hour nap someplace? No, right? So the question is, how do I spread it out to a 10-minute mile pace as opposed to a 8-minute mile pace, right?
The answer to that is by practicing a 10-minute mile pace in training. I mean, that's the mistake that a lot of people who approach their first ultra, they tend not to do ultra training in their, they don't do what they're going to need to do in the race, which is a lot of slow running and B, a lot of walking.
Okay, folks, sorry to intrude here, but I got to split this one in half. Go to episode 16. This was 15, so go to 16 to see the second half of the Don Allison interview, where we're going to talk about all the ultra-running stuff you ever wanted to know.
Here's today's quick tips.
You know, folks, we've been talking a lot about trail running lately. I think you got to get confused a little bit about trail running. You know, there's different kinds of trail running, and if you're going to do the serious stuff like Brian and I were doing this weekend with the highly technical, and we say technical, what we mean is it's typically single path, it's very steep, it's uneven ground, you know, boulder strewn 30% climbs and swinging from trees to trees and stuff like that, a lot of mud and that kind of stuff. That's technical, right? It means it's not easy running. So that's what we mean when we say technical. And if you're going to do that stuff, you want to get some equipment, you want to carry enough stuff with you, you want to expect to fall down a lot. So, you know, if you fall, here's my tip for if you fall, you know, check out the terrain, but it's typically better to roll with the fall because you are going to fall. Your feet get tired and you stop lifting them and you catch a root or a rock. You know, you're going to fall. You got to check the terrain. Sometimes it's better to just go with the fall, roll, and pop up like a, you know, like a parachutist, like a commando. That depends on what you're going to fall into, right? Obviously, if it's a 10,000-foot drop, you want to try and catch yourself. But typically, people get injured when they try to catch themselves because they'll put all their weight on either their wrist or their arm or their shoulder or on their legs. So they'll snap a knee or an ankle trying to catch themselves. So that's, you know, that's what you want to do. If you want to expect to fall, expect to get beat up, expect to get muddy. You want to, when you fall, though, try to make it so you don't hurt yourself. Because I know a lot of people who have rolled their ankles in the woods. And when you're running, you got to run sort of loose, tight. So when you set your foot, you're almost testing every footprint. So you're kind of testing that footfall. So if it gives, or if that rock rolls, or if that foot slips, you're prepared to go with that slip, right? You're not going to plant each foot. When you're trail running, you got to shorten up your stride. and you're not planting each foot. You can't heel strike. You can't plant that foot real hard, because 1 out of 10 times that foot plant is going to slide or it's going to roll. And if you plant that foot hard and put all your weight on it without sort of a testing short stride, you're going to roll that ankle and snap your ankle, or fall down, or pull a quad or a knee or something like that. So you got to develop this little short stride. So you want to warm up for the technical stuff. I mean, it's a blast once you get into it. It's a blast, but you got to warm up. You got to take shorter strides, and you run with a loose, tight stride. So you're testing each footfall as it goes, just briefly, you know, like sub-second test before you put all your weight on, and then you roll off it. So it's interesting. It's something you can only really pick up by practicing a lot. So ease into it, you know. Start with the dirt roads, then go to the grassy fields, then go to the technical stuff, right? All right, we'll see you out in the trails, man. So, you don't know it, but this is it, episode 15 in the can, and I'm right at 35 minutes, so I'm going to give you a little rockabilly. I got some good rockabilly for you. I have eclectic tastes in music, but this is going to be the Black Velvet Elvis with Hellhound. What is it called? It's called Hellhound on My Trail or something. But this will make you realize that I definitely have a wide range in musical taste. Man, it took me 3 tries to record this episode. I kept crashing on this one file, and it was killing me. Audacity kept crashing on me when I was 3/4 of the way done. So I got it now. I got it now. I'm good. We'll see you next time. We're going to pick up the second half of Don's interview, and it's going to be cool, all right?
I gotta make better.